We'll jump ahead to the Ministry of Housing Allowance stuff. Okay, you guys done? Just get started here. So basically, if you go from where you're at now, where you may have a housing allowance as part of your benefit package, part of your salary, you're getting paid salary, you're getting a housing allowance, and that portion of housing, you're not paying taxes on because it's covering your costs to manage the manse or use whatever your housing expenses are. It's a little bit of a different picture once you retire, okay? Because now you're determining how much you're gonna take out each year to cover your housing expenses, okay? So provided you're over 59 and a half, you're not gonna pay a penalty for any kind of an early withdrawal. So you're not stuck paying any kind of an early withdrawal penalty once you're over 59 and a half. So that means whatever you take out, you would normally be taxed on, but if you're gonna use it for housing expenses, you would not be taxed on it. It's really that simple. So essentially, when you say, who determines the amount I'm allowed to designate and withdraw for housing allowance? Okay, you're no longer, if you're retired, it's not the church anymore, it's you. You just decide, what are my housing expenses gonna be? We'll show you a slide later that lists about 20 different items that you can count as housing expenses. And by the way, this will be available, if any of you weren't here, online after GA for you to look at, okay? So if you're still working and you're still getting housing allowance, you can't double dip and take it out of your retirement account too, unless you end up spending more on housing than the housing allowance your employer was giving you, okay? So you determine, you know, how much you're gonna take out to cover your housing costs. You basically just do a budget, you list what your expenses are gonna be and say, I'm gonna use $20,000 a year, so you'll take out, you know, $1,600 a month or whatever it is to get to your $20,000, and you can do it that way. But you tell Fidelity, yes, I'm using this for housing expenses, or I'm using it just for other expenses. When you tell them you're gonna use it for housing expenses, they do not withhold income taxes from it. And when you get your 1099 at the end of the year, they will identify the amount that was used for housing expenses for you, okay? And
is that just Fidelity, or will any company do that that you're investing with?
Well, we're with Fidelity, the EPC retirement plan. You can only use funds from a church plan, a 403b9 church plan. You can't, if you have an IRA or something somewhere else, or from a previous employer, a 401k, you can't use that for housing expenses. So if you do have money elsewhere, make sure you use your EPC retirement plan for your housing expenses first. And don't pull it out of the other because you're gonna have to pay taxes on it, okay? So I kinda answered the first two questions there. And you would designate to Fidelity, and just as a suggestion to you, go to our website, the EPC website, under retirement plan, pull the form out of there, because that's a form that has a spot where you can X the box that says this is for housing expenses. If you just go to Fidelity's main website and pull out a withdrawal form, you don't have that box to mark, and it can get confusing. And I just answered the form question. Yeah?
Well, Barbara, when I just went through this with our friends at Fidelity, now got my first year of distribution, which was sort of, they didn't call out anything for housing. They told me I had to self-identify on my tax form the amount that I was withholding, just like we used to do on the regular tax form, where you say, this is my housing allowance, this is how much I actually used for housing allowance.
Well, on your, you're talking about the 1099 you got at the end of the year?
Whatever form I got, yeah.
There's nothing from Fidelity that indicates that you as a pastor have a housing allowance.
No, that's right.
No, but they did not withhold income taxes, right?
True.
Yeah.
Correct.
So that's what identifies it, that there were no income taxes withheld from it. Yeah. Yeah, so I understand what you're saying. So you've identified, I want to take out X dollars, but it never said on the form that this is the portion that was for.
Feels very different from when we were employed.
Yes.
Because our W-2 typically had our housing allowance.
Right.
And now it's not.
Right.
And, you know,
you're getting a 1099 instead of,
it's
yeah, yeah, yeah. But they didn't withhold taxes, and yes, and when you when you file your tax return, you identify your housing expenses there. Okay? Yeah.
The key is going to be what you're about to say on the 1099 form. So if you would do $10,000 and $4,000 was for housing allowance, if the 1099 says it was $10,000 of taxable income, that's wrong.
Correct. Yeah.
So that's where Fidelity's key, there's coding is key. So if you pull out $10,000 and only $6,000 showed up on the 1099 as taxable income, then even though it feels uncomfortable, but what Bart's saying is right, rest assured that you're not taxed on that.
No. Fidelity told me that I had to self-identify what I was claiming as housing allowance.
On your tax return.
Right.
Yes.
But partially, again, that's not right. Because if there's a 1099 that says that $10,000 of taxable income, you can put whatever you want on your tax return. But you were taxed on the $10,000.
Ron, why don't you just send me the form? Send me the form you're talking about afterwards. But the point being, if you took out $20,000 and $10,000 you designated for housing allowances, your 1099 form should say $10,000 of this is taxable, $10,000 of this is not. Okay. So, and if you took it all out for housing, then there's no designation on it, because you took it all out for housing, and they didn't withhold taxes. Yeah, and then you just enter your housing expenses in your when you fill out your tax return. Anyway, we got like 20 more slides, so we don't want to run out of time going through. Yeah, and again, if you're still receiving housing allowance from church, you can't double dip. Okay, so just remember that. Go ahead to the next slide, Kathy. Right. So how do I figure out, you know, how much I'm allowed to withdraw each year? It's the least of those three according to the federal regulator's rules. In other words, the amount designated by the EPC is you can take up to 100% of what you take out, you're allowed to declare as housing expense. Okay? But it can't exceed your actual housing expense. And if you're a rental, you can calculate, there's a way you calculate the fair rental value of your home that you can also count as housing expense. But you're supposed to take the lesser of the three. So what the denomination allows, there are some denominations that might say, well, only 50% of what you put into your retirement account you can use for housing expenses. We say 100%. That's what we declare. We'll be declaring it a little while later in the office. So basically, keep track of your housing expenses. Keep the records in case the IRS ever audits you. You've got backup documentation that says, yes, these were my mortgage payments. This is what I spent on utilities. This is what I spent on, yard care or whatever. So anyway, go to the next one, Kat. Okay, so if you withdraw too much or too little, in other words, you're not going to get the exact amount your housing expenses were, and that's kind of what we were just talking about. On your tax return, you'll fill in your housing expenses, your actual housing expenses. So if you withdrew $10,000 from your Fidelity account and your actual housing expenses were $9,000, then you are going to have to pay taxes on that other $1,000, okay? If your actual housing expenses were $12,000, it should all come out in the wash, because when you declare the $12,000, $2,000 of that in theory was taxed when you took it out. You follow me? So, but your tax bill will be lower, so you may end up getting a refund if you follow the logic there, okay? Let's see. This is one just to, I always get this question. What if the funds were transferred into my EPC account from a prior plan that was not qualified for housing allowances? You cannot use that for that. And when you did roll the money in, you might not even remember this, but you identified where it had come from. If you came over from another denomination, had a 403b9, then yes, you would be able to use that money, even though it's intermingled with your EPC money, for housing expenses. But if you came and rolled it in from 401k or rolled it in from IRA, Fidelity knows that because you marked a box when you sent it in to them. And they separate those funds. So if you've got $200,000 in there and $100,000 was from a prior 401k, all right, make sure they'll let you use up all your EPC funds first if you're using it for housing expenses. So you just gotta watch you don't waste your EPC funds that are in there for housing expenses. I'm sorry, for non-housing expenses, okay? And then the last question is crucial. once you roll funds out of the church plan here, the EPC's plan, if you roll it into IRA or another non-church plan, you forfeit your housing allowance, okay? So don't do that. And a lot of investment advisors are not aware of that, and they'll say, well, you know, roll it over into an IRA and I'll manage your investments from now on, okay? But as soon as you roll it out, you lost it, okay?
So that's huge, and most of us don't know that. That's why I'm saying 403B9 church plan is a unique plan.
Yeah.
The 99 point something percent of us, I'm a career private wealth management guy, and until I sat in one of these sessions a few years ago at GA, Martin had built at the time, but I'm Googling this one, he can't be right. There's no way you can withdraw money from something like this tax free. And obviously, right. So I've learned a lot. So you got to make sure that, you know, keep in mind, how a project gets paid usually is on the money that they manage. So they've got an incentive, sometimes advice, to tell you to roll it out. So you do have to be very careful.
Let me ask you a question as a financial advisor. My daughter just got her, she's pursuing the CFP, but she just got her Series 7 and 66 and stuff. And she's never had any reference to Ministry of Housing Allowance in any of her training. So just like you said, but are there financial advisors that are willing to give you advice for a fee? Because I know they ultimately want to roll the funds to them so they can manage them for you, and that's how they earn their money. But are there fee-based advisors that these folks can call?
There are fee-based advisors, and even though it's not commercial for my company, but I would give pro bono advice on just a preliminary basis to somebody who doesn't understand more about their situation. So, and there are a lot of folks like that who will do that initially.
Mm-hmm.
And so the main thing to look for is somebody who is a fiduciary. They're required by law to put their client's best interest first. Yes, that makes a big difference, and a lot of the folks aren't aware of that.
Yeah. You go.
I work with the benefits department as a benefit administrator, and I receive a lot of your calls whenever you're calling in to make changes to retirement or withdrawal. And most of the times, it's been the case where the financial advisors are not aware of this being a unique plan, a church plan, and they're not aware of the housing allowance. So even though they're instructing participants to go ahead and move them out, they're not aware. That I've had cases where pastors have called in, and I mentioned to them, are you aware of this? The pastors are not aware of that. And we have all this information available in our website. So if you need to go into more information, we have the frequently asked questions in our website, and the housing allowance part of it. When they go into their research, they learn that it's not, you know, sometimes they take it that we don't want you to take your money out of your account and put it to another account. It's not, it is in your benefit, in your best interest, to consider the housing allowance, because like Bart mentioned, once you take it out, you're not able to bring it back in. But most cases, financial advisors are not aware of this being a unique feature for a plan.
Yeah. You go to the next slide, Kathy. Okay, there are some things that I pulled from a couple different sources that you can use as housing expenses, okay? If you're still mowing the lawn, you can even get your yard care equipment there. Pictures, rugs, bedding, towels. Somebody asked me, what about streaming services? That's not on any list yet, but it seems fairly consistent with cable and internet, you know, streaming services. But anyway, that's a good list to just run down and in your mind and see. Does this help answer the general questions you came in with regard to using the housing allowance? And just again, remember, it's different, like Jeff pointed out, it's different than when you were employed and it was coming out on your W-2 where they're identifying the amount was there for housing allowance as tax exempt. Now you're done with your employer and you're now making those designations yourself, and the amount that you pulled out of your retirement account is going to show on a 1099-R form, okay? And that's how you record your tax return. And make sure your tax preparer, if you're hiring a professional, understands this aspect of it. Usually in the software, there's a question. There's a question asked if you're a minister, and then that takes you into questions with regard to this. What's next? I don't know if we had another one. Okay, just go back to the earlier part of the beginning. Yeah, actually go to the cybersecurity slide because I think this is important. That was the next one there.
I'll ask one question. This is a key thing for me. Jeff passes away, okay? Can his wife continue to get
no.
that tech?
Okay, it's only the person who was the minister. Yeah, it's sad when you think about it, because we just had that situation, and the wife was like, well, can I still use the housing allowance? Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, maybe you're coming to it late, but I just want to pick up on this question earlier. Is it always an advantage then to carry a mortgage?
I think you have to run the numbers, but it's probably, if you have a low interest rate mortgage, right, and you'd be earning more money elsewhere, I mean, you might as well just keep the mortgage, right? I mean, and when you draw and make the mortgage payments with your withdrawal from your retirement account, and then you're not paying any taxes on the money you're taking out, yeah. If you buy your whole house, and it depends on what you can do with the money that you took the money from somewhere to buy the house.
Right.
So it's really a game of sitting down and doing the math. It's based on the interest rate on the loan you might have, and what you could be doing with that money if it was somewhere else or earning money. Yeah. Probably in general, if you might as well keep the mortgage, especially if it's a real low interest rate, and then just get the full mortgage payment, you know, tax-free. Yeah. I thought I'd just bring up the whole cybersecurity thing, because it's really... It's amazing what goes on. I was meeting with some folks at Fidelity, you know, our record keeper. They have 338 full-time people in their cybersecurity department fending off millions of attacks a day that go into their system where hackers are trying to get in, okay? So, and where you can be vulnerable is you'll get an email that says, like you were just showing me an email, right? You'll get an email that looks like it's coming from your retirement account administrator. And it'll say, you know, there's an issue with your account, and it's concern, and usually it's an alarmist sort of a mentality. It's like, you better check this real quick, and they want you to click on a link, and that link takes you out to a false page, and asks you to log into your Fidelity account. You key in your username and password, and now you just gave it out onto the dark web. Okay, so the piece of advice, this is, you know, you can, if you can download this, you can see some of the advice on email security that our IT guy at the office along with Fidelity helped us develop. But the trick is this: if you see something and it seems urgent but feels a little wrong, you know, you got to look at the email address that it came from. And, you know, if it's XYZ at Fidelity at such and such, probably not, probably fake. But the real answer is, just go log into your Fidelity account. Don't click that link, okay? And they could do the same thing on the medical side. They can say, hey, we've got an update on your recent diagnostic test. And pretty much a lot of us at a certain age probably had something done within the past 6 months. Like, oh, they must have found something, you know? I better find out. You click on the link, and you think you're logging into your doctor's website or the lab's website. And again, it's a false thing. And once you put your password in, they steal it. So I'm just saying, you gotta be really cautious about text messages that have links and email messages that once you go click on something. And the easiest solution, if it's related to a medical situation, you probably have an account, login account with your doctor, the message would be there. If there's no message there, then you know the thing was a fake. Same thing with Fidelity. So just some things to really keep in mind. We'll run back to the beginning, and the beginning stuff is more for newbies who are trying to figure out where to invest their funds. So we can probably just pop through some of that. Slide two. Go to slide two first, the second one you just had up. I just want to look. Yeah. Yeah, this is probably not that important. I mean, you can roll in funds from other sources. Doesn't have to always be a 403b9. You can contribute as well as your church employer, so keep that in mind. And I think we'll have a slide later, but I'll mention it now. There are catch-up provisions, meaning that once you're over 50, I think it is, you can start putting in more than the maximum that was there before. And I don't remember the exact numbers, but I believe we have a chart on our website. But let's just say the most you can put in a retirement account in a year is 17,000. Once you hit 50, there's a provision you can put an extra 5 in if you want. And at certain ages, you can put a whole lot more in. In fact, I think you can put up to 50,000 extra in. And here's a unique thing, which we may get to also on a slide, but church plan, a 403b9 church plan, this will be a new thing for our investment advisors sitting out there. They can contribute for up to 5 years after you retire into your retirement account. And you don't need to, we're all ministers here. So the other thing I've seen them do is that if a minister's retiring and they want to give you a gift of some kind, that's they could put that gift right into your retirement account for you, so it goes in tax-free, and it comes out tax-free if you're using it for housing allowance. So think about that if you're close to retirement or whatever, and it's just ways that they your church, if they want to, you know, give you a goodbye gift or want to continue to support you for a little while after your retirement, they can do that by making contributions into your 403b9, which is a neat provision.
The limit this year is $22,500. If you're 50 or older, you're right about 50, it's an extra $7,500, so you can put $30,000 of your own money.
Yeah. And there's other provision later on. Isn't there a $50,000 thing?
I have the tax guide, so I'm
yeah, no, I got you. Me, you don't have everything with you, huh?
I think for self, it is $30,000 this year.
Right, that's kind of what you just said, yeah. Yeah. So remember, you can contribute in addition to what your employer's contributing for you. Obviously, you always don't have that much extra money to take out, but you do have that option. And another thing, if you are into investing, you know, we have the target date funds, which are based on the year you expect to closest. Every 5 years, there's a target date fund, 2025, 2030, 2035, and so on. Hey, Jim. So there are target date funds, and they will then invest the money based on your age, getting more conservative as you get closer to your retirement date. Okay, playing more risk, higher return in your younger years, and then as you get older. So they will automatically do that for you, which means you don't have to be managing it, especially if you don't have the knowledge to do it. You also can select individual funds, money market funds that are just getting a small amount of money return with no risk, very little risk, or at the other end of the spectrum, you know, some small cap or foreign investments and things like that, where you think you could get a huge return, but then there's risk there. But and we also have the ability for you to use a self-directed brokerage link, which means you can invest pretty much anywhere you want. So if you want to do the investing and about 4% of our dollars are being self-directed, where the individuals are deciding where they want to invest it rather than using one of the designated funds that are available. Good, Kathy. So, suggestion, a lot of people never log into their retirement account. There's a handful, I don't remember what the percentage is, but there's a percentage of people who have never logged into their retirement account at Fidelity. So they don't know what's in there, and maybe they don't care. I did have a guy visit me a few weeks ago that he's been in the field as a missionary, and he said, I haven't looked at it since 2008. So he had a lot of money in there too. So anyway, so you can do all kinds of things in there. Another important thing, check or change your beneficiaries. You can go in there and you can do that. And one in seven maybe does not have a beneficiary designated. So if you're a spouse here and your husband didn't designate you as the beneficiary, I think I'm talking to the one person back there. You better tell him to go look and make sure. You better go tell him to make sure that he didn't forget about you, because if something happens to him and you find out he forgot to put your name in there, you guys will be in big trouble when she gets up there to meet you in the kingdom, you know, a number of years later. It says, "What? What do you forget all about me?" Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
God's word about money and possessions and everything else. You cannot be one of those people who never looks at your stuff. You don't have to be an expert in it, but if you don't know how to do this stuff, you need to make sure you're leveraging resources of those who do. Beneficiary designations matter. If you have young pastors in your congregation and they have their spouse listed as primary and their minor children listed as contingent beneficiaries, a minor cannot inherit an asset. There are problems here. There are basic little things that get missed. And the fact that one in seven don't even have a beneficiary, and for those who haven't looked, they don't even know if they haven't done.
Yeah.
Right.
And same thing with your life insurance, too. If you have life insurance through the church, make sure that you've designated your beneficiary there, because the people miss that there as well. Yeah. So anyway, I suggest periodically, a couple times a year, you should log into your account. And you also, probably on the next slide, Kathy, but we can flip up. You're, I'm on the topic. You're entitled to free meetings with a Fidelity certified financial planner whenever you want to do it. You make an appointment and you can get on the phone with them and they can look at your distribution of, you know, assets and where you have it invested and your age and what your goals are for retirement and give you an idea of how you should be investing your money or if they should change it. And you can go in whenever you want and you can change it. You can say, I don't want to be in this target date fund anymore, or I don't want to be in this such and such, you know, small cap stock fund anymore. I want to move it over to a growth stock or whatever fund and so on. So you do all that. But I'm mostly, you probably don't have much knowledge in that area, and that's why you can tap into these resources that you have.
Sorry, hard to interrupt you. If you want to call online, the people on the telephone, you can also do it electronically. Once you log into your account, there's a section that you answer questions based on your current needs and what your goals are. And as you answer the questions, they give you the suggestions on how to invest the funds. And you have to accept or not what the options are giving you. But you have the option to do it online, that you don't necessarily have to get on the phone and get those answers.
Yeah, if you want to talk to a real human, that is an option for you. Why don't we just jump to the next?
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, sure.
Actually, the page before I answered, like, it's sort of a common sense, but I'm not. It talks about resetting passwords.
Yeah.
Now, I've gotten things before, somebody said, something's happened to me, and I've gone and reset my passwords, right? Thought, just check, all that. Is there a world out there where people know my password, are sitting on it for a year or two, and are going to get into it later? What's the.
I was talking to our IT guy and the IT folks, and sometimes it's pretty quick if your password gets out there, and sometimes it's a few weeks later. I don't know if a year later, unless you drop a piece of paper that has it on it. You'd want to reset your password if you ever accidentally hit that button and went to a link that you realize, oh shoot, this is a false link. I just keyed in my password for Fidelity. Go right to your Fidelity account after that and change your password right away. Yeah.
Is there a benefit just routinely change your password once a year? Or is it just
It's hard to say. It's a lot of systems make you do it. Yeah, yeah, but then you got to remember them all. That's the hardest part. Yeah.
Don't think it was like one person who found your password. And
get jumped two slides.
Like algorithms and machines that collect lots of passwords and somebody accesses that database and passwords later.
Yeah, I don't want to. Don't get lost in the detail here, but there's a concept in investing just to give you some basic understanding if you don't have it. You know, if you put your money in a money market fund, it's pretty much as good as cash. The federal government's backing it up. If you put your money in some kind of a global foreign equity sort of a sin, that's a lot of risk. And this is basically the spectrum of risk. You know, when you're younger, you can be in this area in some of these other all equity sort of investments. As you get older, you want to be more conservative. But these are the target date funds we offer every 5 years. And then these are the different funds we offer within the more conservative classes, and then as you go up, okay? So again, I'm just giving you a quick snapshot here to say that there's a spectrum of risk that you can choose to invest in, and that's why if you don't have the expertise, you talk to a Fidelity advisor or an independent advisor who's a fiduciary and get some advice on where you should be. If you don't have any idea, start off, just put it in a target date fund, because then somebody's managing it for you based on roughly what your retirement date's going to be. I have just one more. The next slide kind of also illustrates some stuff for you. Same thing. The blue ones are the different funds. This is the same risk spectrum out here where you have emerging markets and all that sort of stuff where you could be investing. We don't offer anything out here, but small cap fund would be the highest risk fund, but potentially with more return. But if you're down here, again, it's very conservative and the risk level is very low, but the returns are lower. Okay, when you're young, if you're investing in stuff that's earning 7, 8, 9%, that compounds real big every year. If you're young and you put it in something super conservative where you're getting 2%, the compounding is much smaller, if you can understand the concept. So I just want to help you with the concept. The next one I think is a really good slide to see. This shows, again, don't get lost in all the noise here. This is from 1980 to the current year, okay? The Standard & Poor's 500 index, the red dot is where the low was for that year. The line, end of the black line, is where it closed for the year in terms of the value in the index. So if you had a dollar and in 2000, where's COVID? Okay, COVID's right here, 2020. If you had a dollar in 2020, when the end of February, middle of February, when COVID hit, the market dropped 34% within like 4 weeks. So your dollar went down to what, 64 cents or whatever? Yeah, 66 cents, okay. At the end of the year, the market closed up, am I lying right? I'm looking at it sideways. The market closed up 16% at the end of that year. So if you panicked and pulled your money out here, and then it went right back up. So this is the 2008, the big housing collapse thing. Market at the low was 49% down. So you had a dollar in at the beginning of the year, you had 51 cents at the bottom. And then it closed at minus 38%. But then look at this for all these years. So this is looking at like 42 years. It's up 9% when I did this year to date. Last year was a really bad year, the only one since 2008, literally, where it went down 19%. But the bottom line is, when you're in it for the long haul, the average return over these years was like 7.5% a year, okay? So you don't, this says don't try and time the market because it's very difficult to do. So long term, you can be invested pretty aggressively if you're looking out 20, 30 years before you're going to retire. Short term, you should be more conservative. For instance, if you're getting ready to retire 2 years from this date, think about it, and you had a dollar in there. The next year, you had 90 cents, dropped another 13. The next 3 years, all of a sudden, you probably dropped like 40% in the value that you had in your account. So that's why, as you get closer to retirement, you want to be more conservative. This is equities, this is stocks, okay? If you had your money in just a bond, you might have earned 2% a year versus the 7% on average. I'm hitting you with a lot of information, but I hope this is helpful to see. This kind of shows you the volatility, and you don't want to panic when the market's gone down and run out. If you can, especially if you can have a long time horizon, because you can see if there's 43 years here, I think there's 12 where it was down, and the other 30 some it was up. So there's your quick finance class that, I don't know if you caught that in seminary when you were there or not. Yeah, so go ahead, Kathy. These are resources you have through Fidelity. And again, this slide will be available, but there's articles you can go, that they have webcasts, they have workshops, they have interactive tools, they have educational videos. They're resources when you log into Fidelity into your account that would be available for you. And again, I'm just flipping it up so you can see. There's a lot of options. There's a lot of topics. I think that, you know, paying off your student loans, basics of Social Security, a lot of good resources that you have. And the next slide, I think, shows some more resources. There, these are more specific on the investing side. The last slide was more dealing with miscellaneous topics that you deal with on aging or paying off student loans or how to deal with an emergency crisis. So again, this will be available, and this information is on the website. But both these two slides are key when you down this load this. Go ahead, Kathy. How am I doing with my time here? And we kind of talked about this concept, the different resources you have, which were shown there.
How many no cost meetings do you get a year?
It's unlimited.
Unlimited.
Yeah. Hopefully, you don't need that much advice that often. You call once a week. It's me again.
And really helpful to me.
Have they?
A few times I've needed to change okay. Application. It's super helpful.
Good. Good. Glad to hear it. Go ahead, Kathy. Again, we kind of touched on a lot of this stuff already. Both you and your employer can make contributions. We already talked about the ability to do catch-up contributions. Roth contributions is something you don't want to do in a church plan, because a Roth IRA or a Roth 401k or whatever is you put money in and it's taxed when you put it in, so it's not taxed when you take it out. Okay? Typically it's the other way. It's not taxed when you put it in, but it's taxed when you take it out. But with the Ministry of Housing Allowance, it's not taxed when you put it in and it's not taxed when you take it out. So don't ever put your money in a Roth type account, which we offer for the non-ministers.
Yeah, but not all money going in that 403b is going to come out as half, it's going to come out as housing.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
Otherwise, there's other reasons you would have it in there.
Yeah.
In that case, a Roth would not be helpful?
If it's not, otherwise, if you have something, you know, this is not going to come out as housing.
Yeah. It's correct. If you've got everything in and you've got 400,000 in there and you're retiring at 65 and you figure, well, for the rest of my life, I'm only going to use 200,000 for housing. Yeah, then the other 200,000, had you put it in as Roth, yes. A lot of times you already have money in a 401k or whatever from a previous employer. So you say, I'm going to use that for all my other expenses because I'm going to get taxed on it and I'm going to use this, the EPC plan for all of my other. It's hard to gauge, you know, 20, 30 years before you're going to retire, what your situation is going to be. yeah. There's some important rules that just came out that I might want to just jump to. I'm just trying to be anything important. There are, you can withdraw money when you're less than 59 and a half, but you pay a 10% penalty plus the taxes. So you want to avoid doing that at all costs. Recent legislation, which I'm going to get to, has opened up a few doors where you can take money out before you're 59 and a half. And we'll get to that now. Okay, go ahead, Kathy. Okay, there are new provisions in Secure Act 2. Did we skip a slide or not? Must be the next slide it's on then, yeah. Let's see. We've kind of touched on most of this. Obviously, the housing expenses. We did this backwards. We already did some of the things. Yeah. Up until the Secure Act 2 came out, you basically had three tools for taking out your money from your retirement account. There are ways to have a fixed amount paid periodically to you. There are ways based on your life expectancy and what they think the return's going to be. They would say, well, if you take out this much a month, it should last you till you're 85 or whatever. So there were tools like that. We're taking out a percentage, like 1% a month out of your retirement account or something like that. They were the traditional tools, and they still are there for you to use. There's one new one that's been added in terms of how you want to make your withdrawals, which probably the next slide or two we'll get into that. Yeah, okay. Secure Act 2 came out the end of last year, okay? And now they added several early withdrawal provisions where you're not going to be penalized. I'm thinking maybe the next slide or two shows some examples of it. But for instance, if you're living in an area that's been declared a national disaster area from a hurricane or a tornado, your property was damaged, there are limits to the amount you can take out. But you could take out, and again, I don't remember the numbers, but let's say you can take out $10,000 without paying a penalty for it if you needed that money to do repairs. Birth or adoption of a child, you can take out $5,000. And there are several other things that were set up by, well, Secure Act 1 and now Secure Act 2. So there are ways in certain situations you can draw money out of your retirement account. You still have to pay the taxes, but you won't have to pay the 10% penalty. It's limited, it's a handful of things, but be aware that it's out there. You have a natural disaster, your house is flooded, whatever, you'll be able to take out a certain amount without the penalty. The next one is brand new, okay? It's a guaranteed income option that you're now allowed to do. You can take a chunk of your money out, you can give it over to an insurance company and buy an annuity where you would get a guaranteed fixed return coming back to you on a monthly basis or however you want to structure your annuity. Fidelity is contracting with four different insurers, and this is brand new, so this information will, you know, if you folks aren't getting our newsletters, try and sign up for the newsletters and we'll try and keep you informed. But essentially, if you're saying 65, I really don't want the risk of another market slide or whatever, I'm going to take some money out, I'm going to turn it over to Prudential or whoever the insurance company is to set up an annuity for me so that I get a guaranteed payout lifetime, whether the markets go up or down. It's a risk return thing. You know, maybe the market goes down for the next 7 years and you're sitting pretty because you locked in at a certain rate and you're getting paid out. But this was not an option for a defined contribution retirement plan up until the Secure Act 2 came out. So you do have that option, and there'll be more information coming on that. Now, this first question we went back to him with, we work with Church Alliance, which is a legal advocacy and lobbying organization. So the first question went back is, say, wait a minute. The rule I said earlier, if you took your money out of your 403b9 and rolled it into an IRA, you would forfeit your housing allowance. So what happens if I take it out of my 403b9 and roll it into an annuity with an insurance company? Did I just forfeit my housing allowance on that money? So it's still being double checked, because a lot of times they put out the legislation, but they don't turn over every stone and learn about this stuff. So we understand that it's something called a qualified purchase of a deferred annuity should enable you to help to still preserve your housing allowance. You can take that money out, use it for housing expenses, and not pay income tax on it. But the jury's still out on that, and we're waiting for that to be more specific. So everything you see a little star on is related to the Secure Act 2 stuff that's happening out there, if you look at this thing. So any questions on that concept I just threw out?
Is that information available within the Fidelity website, or do you have to go extra?
It may not be available anywhere just yet, because it's new legislation, still being vetted through. It is available to use, but I don't know enough about it yet and to advise you to say, oh, jump right into it and do it, because if you annuitize it, then you find out later you just lost your housing allowance. I don't want you chasing after me. okay, but anyway, it's a new provision. I don't remember what's next, Kathy, but we can jump through it. We kind of already talked about this. We were on these slides. I guess I have a couple of interesting slides. Just keep going through what we did. And then this one, then the next one. Yeah, there you go, back up one. These are just thoughts on retirement, you know, and what is it for you? Because it is worth thinking it through. Those that have retired might say, yeah, I did all those things, or I didn't do all those things. But, is retirement for you just going to be changing what you do? You're going to get a job doing something else or something you really like? And is it mean just you're not going to work anymore? And, like, when do you retire? You just start thinking about these things. When I reach my full Social Security retirement age, which is 66, 67, 68, depending on how young you are. I was 66 years and 4 months, and I think it gradually gets a little higher. Is it now? It does. Is it going to keep going up, or is it?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah.
They change the legislation,
yeah. Yeah. And there's other reasons to retire. It happens because you're burned out. You got grandchildren to go visit somewhere, or when you know your wife and spouse and you finally decide we're going to go do our dream thing or whatever. A couple other thoughts to throw by. A lot of people get a lot of fulfillment out of their job, and the day you retire, you kind of have that void. So, think about. Where is your identity? Is it in your job or is it elsewhere? And when you retire, is it going to be an emotional kick down the road for you? They're the big financial considerations, as far as I know. The medical costs, why a lot of people wait till they're Medicare eligible to retire. Housing, food, transportation, as believers, the giving aspect of it. Saving to cover future medical and long-term care expenses. I don't know if that's an endless thing if you try and do it, but yeah. And the other thought is, you're going to phase out of working. Are you going to keep working part-time, and are you going to shift into other things? But just a lot of things to, I don't know what you folks are mulling over in your heads on this stuff. And I think I have one more on the retirement things.
Can I ask a question about the, if you were to have a long-term care insurance, I've been working drills with my parents too, so I'm thinking for them and for me. Well, I know for them, but were we to have long-term care insurance, once we started activating that, I assume the appropriate portions of that payment from the insurance company could be designated under the housing allowance, the tax exemption. Let's say we became residential.
I don't know much about the long-term care insurance, but if you're taking money from an insurance policy, that wouldn't be anything related to housing allowance, right?
It matters where the money comes from. It's the housing expense.
Yeah, my parents receive, my mom receives an amount every month from UNUM, and she turns around and writes a check to the long-term care, the memory care unit where my father was. And I'm just thinking about the housing allowance of that when my wife has to put me in place. Because that's in our financial plan at 82.
Yeah, I really don't know. I don't know anything about that. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't really know anything about that aspect of it. So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, only money you're taking out of a church plan can be used for housing expenses on a tax-free basis. Yeah. So, yeah, if it's being taken out of some other thing. The one thing with long-term care, especially if you're on the younger side, if you can get a whole life insurance policy now, a lot of them have riders where if you go into a nursing home, you can start tapping into your life insurance proceeds early, or if you have dementia or a terminal illness. I have one that has, it's a $250,000 policy, and it could all go toward a long-term care facility for me before I die. So I get to actually use my life insurance money. But I forget what they're called exactly, but it's one way without buying a long-term care policy, you buy a whole life insurance policy where they give you an early payout option if you're going in. It's a bit off topic. That's not... I mean, I don't really know much about any of this, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
That could be a reason to bias toward a form of self-funding for long-term care. If you could have a section of the four, I'm thinking out loud, the 403B9 that is going to provide for that residential care, because then would it, if it's coming out
It's not on the list of housing expenses that you can use it for.
Okay.
So, yeah. And again, this was just some milestones I want to throw out there. Obviously, when you turn 65 and you're eligible for Medicare, that's going to cut your medical expenses by quite a bit. So that can be an opportunity to say, okay, it's time now. Full Social Security age, which is 66 or older, which caps at 67, when you're going to be able to get your Social Security benefits. I mean, you can start at 62 with your Social Security benefits, but the longer you wait, the more they pay you. It's an odds game. You need to know when you're going to die to figure out the actual time when you should start taking it out. And just some other stuff there. The minimum distribution age is another thing that kind of drives what you want to do, because eventually you have to start taking money out of your retirement accounts or you're going to get penalized. I don't know if I had anything else in here, unless we can open it up for slides here. Newsletters, if you're not getting them, you know, go on our website and sign up for them. Yeah, it's okay. And I want to keep you guys much longer. What, is there anything else there, Kathy? With the cybersecurity up there? There's contact information with our plan number and everything. And again, you can grab all this online. And our website has this stuff. And that's probably the last thing besides the cybersecurity, right, Kathy? Yeah. Okay. So anybody have any other questions in mind right now? Sorry to wake you up with the bright light. Yes, sir.
Maybe just a couple things. I've talked to a number of colleagues here who are retirement age, but their spouses are 4, 6, 8 years younger than them. And that's a major issue.
Yeah.
Because if they go into Medicare, they're still going to have to provide health insurance for their spouse. So that's one issue.
Yeah.
Another issue is if Social Security is a major source of income for you in 2023, I'd encourage you to keep an eye on what's out on the horizon here. And I'm not talking about what the Republicans are saying or what the Democrats are saying, but what financial planner types, investment types, those sort of people are saying, because 2033, 2035, somewhere out there, if there is not major reform, the money that you think is coming to you in 2023 is simply not going to be there.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. So, I mean, hopefully I was helpful with all this for you. And, I mean, if you're younger, manage your investments well. Don't just let them sit there. So you're sure to maximize your return over your lifetime. And, you know, if you're older, there are tough decisions there, especially the spouse thing. Just one quick thing on the health insurance, the medical insurance that the EPC provides. If you're in a small church, the church is not obligated to continue with your health insurance once you become Medicare eligible. Now, we used to provide a Medicare supplement plan, so people stayed in the plan. But, and I'm going back to the point Jeff just made. So we found that because the government subsidizes Medicare, okay, you're better off going into Medicare than staying on our supplement, because we were paying the full cost of it, and therefore our premiums were higher than the Medicare premiums. So sometimes people say, hey, the EPC pushes us out of the plan when we turn 65. Not really. If our rates were $1,000 a month because you're 64, 65, 67 years old, the Medicare premium might be only $250 because the government is subsidizing that difference. So the idea is you leave the plan when you become Medicare eligible, get your benefits from Medicare, have the church reimburse you for your Medicare premiums. They pay less, you have equal benefit to what you had before, and the church saves and you save. It's a win-win. You follow me? Now, what about the spouse that's 4 years younger? Well, the provision we have is you turn 65, your spouse is 61. She just stays on the EPC plan. You go off, she'll stay in, taking the role almost like the employee. And if you have a dependent, they stay on the plan too. And it could be reversed. If the spouse turns 65 and becomes Medicare eligible, he or she would come off the plan, get Medicare. And if based on your salary package, they were willing to pay the premium for both you and your spouse, right? So the spouse leaves, you stay, but they help subsidize the spouse's premium. It's still saving the church money and saving you money. So that's the way that structure works in case anybody says, hey, they're kicking us off, that's not nice. Larger employers, 20 employees or more. So if a church has 20 or more full-time equivalent employees, they have to keep covering you. They can't kick you out to Medicare. Okay? Helpful? We good? Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That's two quick questions.
Sure.
So I'm retiring at the end of the year, pre-65, I'll be 63 and a half.
Okay.
Is there any provision within the EPC in terms of medical coverage to somehow continue that? Because I'm a teaching elder, I mean, obviously we want to run the numbers and do comparisons and all that, but...
You could stay in the plan until you're 65.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then just pay directly, obviously, to the
EPC. Self-pay. Self-pay, yeah.
And so then I would... Again, just running the numbers, right?
Yeah.
Just to see if I can find something better outside.
Yeah. Once you leave, you can't come back.
Right,
but yeah.
Right, yeah. Okay, great. Second question. Yeah. I was a PCA pastor for a number of years, or PCUSA,
right.
And have a Fidelity account through that. Could I?
Is it a pension plan or is it a Fidelity account?
Well, both.
Okay.
We have both. So with the Fidelity plan I have with PCUSA,
right.
Would it be possible to do the same thing with both housing out of that, even though I'm not a PCUSA?
Yeah, yeah. It's what you earned while you were a minister.
Okay.
That is what counts. So if the Fidelity account there, which I guess is a defined contribution plan, not the pension plan, right?
Right, correct.
Right. That should be just the same as ours.
Okay.
Check with PCUSA, but I don't see why it wouldn't be a church plan.
Okay, and because it's Fidelity account, same stipulation that after 59 and a half, I don't have to pay a 10%.
Has nothing to do with Fidelity.
Okay.
That's federal law.
Okay.
Yeah. All the stuff is based on federal regulations. So the only question you have for PCUSA is, hey, is my Fidelity account with you guys, was that contributed, is that a church plan?
Right.
Is that, so can I use it for housing?
I log into Fidelity, it says I have two plans, PCUSA and EPC.
Okay.
It gives me the numbers and investments for both.
Yeah. So okay. They're two separate accounts.
Right.
So you want to make sure from the PCUSA, I'm saying 95% chance it is, because why would they do it?
The EPC account is substantially bigger, right? Rather,
yeah.
Keep that going and growing, mm-hmm. and pull housing from the smaller.
Yeah. Well, you should be able to roll your... It into the EPC account if you want. You should be able to, yeah. Confirm first that it's a church plan.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, it doesn't matter. You can roll it either way, actually. But I would think you're employed by the EPC, so you probably want to keep it there. Yeah.
Okay.
Good. Do the best I can, except for that one guy out there that kept asking me the hard questions. Yeah.
As after Fidelity. So what happened? So I'm running the 2020 fund. So
yeah.
What's happening with that?
You know what? It keeps going.
Yeah,
I think the lowest one is like 2015, and,
yeah.
And I think there's an extra fund that is for everybody else that they way past it now.
Yeah,
but it is still a target date fund.
Doing that.
Yeah.
Cutting
yeah.
it down, it's not seeing the big bounces with the young guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I just wondered. I thought if they were going to call me and somebody was going to move it over for me or tell me I had to move it.
It's your call. It's not just going to go away. And if it does, they'll move it somewhere intentionally for you. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
So you mentioned that we could talk with a licensed investment fidelity advisor.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
And you gave a phone number. I saw the phone number on the slide. I just call them and say, EPC and...
Well, give the plan number. What's our plan number?
81560.
8959. Yeah. You just say, I'm with EPC plan number 89560, I'd like to meet, my husband and I would like to meet with a financial advisor to discuss, you know, how we're invested and stuff. And they'll ask you a lot of questions about what's your time horizon for retirement, what's your risk tolerance level, and so on. And then they'll make a suggestion as to how you might want to redistribute the funds that you have.
And we have talked with that person once before.
Okay.
Okay, so now I have another question for you. Okay, so after being a pastor for like 35 years, my husband went on staff with World Outreach.
Okay.
And so...
Take care.
How is that going to work as far as him when he gets 65?
Well,
as far as going on Medicare, and then how long? Like, we know other people who have retired, and then like the spouse, they're only required for 2 years or something like that. But I was wondering, so with World Outreach, is that kind of the same as the GA staff?
Yeah.
Where I'd be able to stay on longer?
Nothing. And you're talking about your medical coverage right now? Or you're talking, you're talking about medical coverage?
I'm just talking medical. Because our medical.
Right. So he,
World Outreach.
Yeah, you're domestic.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah, everything's the same, man. Whatever I just said is the same. So that he's on staff with World Outreach, so they'll be making contributions to his retirement plan, and then he's going to turn 65 and he's going to come off the EPC plan. You're younger.
Medical, right.
Yeah, just what I just said. You'll stay on, he'll go off to Medicare, and then his costs will go down, so he doesn't have to raise as much funds for the medical then. And so you'll.
Can I stay on that?
Yes.
Yeah,
as long as he's still working, you can stay on. And then if he retires before you turn 65, you can extend your coverage for one more year.
That's what it is. Yeah. Okay. That's what it is. Because I knew there was something that it's because they had stopped working.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's when you continue to work. Okay.